Colectivo Raíces presenta su programa
Espejos de Aztlán.
Información,
arte,
cultura.
Bienvenidos.
Bienvenidos a su programa Espejos de Aztlán. Welcome to your show, Espejos de Aztlán. This evening, we are in an electroacoustic mood. How about you? Electroacoustic music from Latin America, that's our topic today. Música electroacústica desde Latinoamérica. ¿Está usted en la onda electroacústica hoy? Pues espérenos, porque ahora tenemos una entrevista con el doctor Dal Farra acerca de música electroacústica en Latinoamérica. ¿Sabía usted que comenzó a desarrollarse en los años 50? We're going to have an interview with Dr. Dal Farra, who actually lives in Canada and Argentina, and he's exhibiting these days in the Digital Latin America exhibition organized by 516 Arts in Albuquerque. Dr. Ricardo Dal Farra, he's a composer, a multimedia artist, researcher, educator, performer, and curator. There are lots of stories about electroacoustic music in Latin America. For Espejos de Aztlán today, my name is Cristina Bachín. Welcome, Dr. Ricardo Dal Farra, for our KUNM audience on our Raíces Collective shows, and talking with us from Canada.
Thank you for inviting me.
The main reason because we are inviting you is because I'm really very curious of your exhibition, the part of your exhibition during Digital Latin American Art Symposium here in Albuquerque. I saw this amazing exhibition about your collection of electroacoustic music. I'm wondering, and I think our listeners might be curious about how or when does electroacoustic music begin in Latin America and in which countries?
Yes, the electroacoustic music started in Latin America really almost at the same time than in Europe, where the origins are. I mean, in France first and then in Germany. But in Latin America, you can find like people like Mauricio Kagel, that was already experimenting in the early 50s, around 53, 54. He was already experimenting with what is called concrete music that started in France in the late 40s. And also you're going to have, like in Chile, for example, during the mid-50s, people working with what we call today electroacoustic music. But really it's amazing to find how many people and in so many places, so many countries in Latin America were doing electroacoustic music since the 50s or 60s, in some others since the 70s. But I mean, in many, many places, and it's interesting to see that many of this music and many of these composers were mostly unknown in the northern hemisphere. So in the south, we usually hear, we were listening to the music done in the north, but the people from the north had basically, most of them, no idea what was going on in Latin America until, I would say, more or less recently. So this was an amazing project to carry out and to make, in quotes, let's say, discover that there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of composers creating electroacoustic music.
You are building a whole archive that it's also opened to the public through the website. Which is the organization that supports this?
This project started, I would say, more than 30 years ago. So this was for me. I was collecting this music first because I was interested myself, then because I was using it in classes, then I was programming these works in my lectures, in concerts, in radio series, I was doing CDs, etc., etc. But the opportunity to make of this something really well organized came in two steps. The first part was the text. The first part was organizing a research that I have been doing for several decades, that's something that was published by UNESCO in the early 2000 through a project that was called DG Arts. So many thousands of words describing, I mean, the creation of many electroacoustic composers are in this project that was supported by UNESCO. But the collection itself containing the music, because at first was just a text, so the collection itself with the music was supported by the Daniel Langlois Foundation for Art, Science and Technology, that is a foundation based in Montreal, where I'm now. So this collection today has almost 1,800 works, full works, that were composed between 1957 and 2007. That spans 50 years. And from those almost 1,800 works, we were able to, because these works are basically for preservation. Yes, that's the idea, to have the works preserved for the future.
Which were the countries that were at that moment beginning with this? You were mentioning already some of the beginners.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Well, the pioneering activities were really in Argentina, were in Chile, were also starting in the mid-50s too, in Brazil. So there were a good number of places where the music was starting early in the 50s, and even in places like Cuba, for example, the first electroacoustic music composed in Cuba by Juan Blanco was done in 1961.
He also invented an instrument. I was reading in your it's amazing. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Well, Juan Blanco, he made a patent in 1942 of something that he called the multi-organ. That really, that's the
amazing.
He never built the instrument, but he had the patent. Mm-hmm. He died a few years ago. But Juan, he was an amazing person. He composed over 100 works of electroacoustic music. But this instrument is the direct antecedent of what we call today the sampler. And the sampler is the instrument that basically revolutionized the music creation and the music industry. So he is the first that we are aware that made a patent well before what is called as a mellotron, for example, that most of the people is saying is the antecedent of the sampler. Well, I mean, even if there is a future film, the documentary done in the U.S., saying that the first instrument was the mellotron, yes, was the first instrument built, but the director forgot to say that the idea was not coming from that person. The idea came at least before from a person in Cuba.
Quiero decir muchísimo. Y me adoyo, no hay cifra hablada que no sea una.
How the Latin American context, the political conditions, cultural and economic conditions influenced in the development of this art throughout all this time that you were collecting music?
I lived most of my life in Latin America, so I have been going through all the the issues, the characteristics, let's put it that way, and the difficulties of creating, well, working in the arts in general, and even working in particular in electroacoustic music. Why? Because today making electroacoustic music is completely different. I mean, if you have a good computer, or even a not so good computer, you can do a lot of things. But before, you was relying on having a minimum of equipment, and usually were not the individuals that were having the equipment.
Yeah.
So you needed a lab, you needed a studio, you needed a lot of equipment that was extremely expensive, and there were not that many. There were, from time to time, some unbelievable places like the Ditela Institute that was during the 60s in Argentina, that was conducted by Alberto Ginastera, the composer, and he, between other things, I mean, there were a lot of composers coming from all Latin America to Buenos Aires to study new music in general, and after a couple of years, electroacoustic music studio was built that was at first directed by Cesar Bolaños from Peru. And in this place, a lot of compositions were created, and also research was carried out. So it was a really an amazing place. But in general terms, both in Argentina, for example, the Ditela Institute was closed in the early 70s because we had a military coup that was, of course, not happy with people doing strange things that they couldn't understand.
I am familiar with that.
Sorry?
I am familiar with that.
Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and during the 70s and 80s, we had a lot of heart problems because we had like military coups and military governments in several places in Latin America. I mean, just to mention a few, I mean, we had issues in Argentina, in Brazil, in Chile. So, I mean, and the situation in general was repeated in different ways with different local characteristics, but the generality was that there were not just social or the problems with the economy of the country, but was also the restrictions of freedom and was the restriction in general, especially for someone who is creating a kind of art that is hard to understand for someone who is not involved with it. And so even for some artists, it's hard to understand what electroacoustic music is. So can you imagine for someone who is basically afraid of anything that can, let's say, question the regular order? So what the people were doing at some point, some composers were working with their own system, usually not very advanced, in different places around in Latin America. Many people founding their own studios of electroacoustic music, like Jorge Antunes was starting in the early 60s in Brazil. But many people from Latin America were going to study in France, for example, at the GRM, the Groupe de Recherche Musicale, in Paris. So they were studying in France, in Germany, in the US, and they were creating their works in these countries. Sometimes they were coming back to their original places, to the Latin American country where they were living before, and sometimes they decided to stay in Europe or North America, depending on the case. But I mean, even for the people who were staying in Europe or North America, most of them, after decades, started to come back to Latin America, even if it was for a while. So some of them are like going in and out from Latin America and presenting their works in Latin America today.
Quiero decir muchísimo. Y me atoyo, no hay cifra hablada que no sea suma.
Like you.
Yes, like me.
Like
I'm doing
you.
It all the time. Yes, I started to compose in a very early age. So I have been doing electroacoustic music myself for many years. Right?
Yeah, I was also checking on your compositions, and I was wondering how was for you also going back and forth, and how all this opportunity that brings you at this moment to be in a different country, maybe it's also a way of having a freedom, another door to specially develop with more resources, I guess.
Well, I think that today the resources are, as I was saying before, the resources are different. Mm-hmm. It's not just the key like it was before to have access to certain places with certain kind of equipment. Yes, if it is good if you have access to certain kind of equipment, but it's not today like mm-hmm. it was, let's say, even 15 or 20 years ago. I mean, imagine 40 years ago. So for me, it was not easy. I usually compose, most of my works were composed in Argentina. So I was using my own devices. It was not easy because in some places even was not only that was hard to have the equipment, but also in another era, let's put it that way, some people were controlling this equipment in a way that even if the equipment was coming from supported by the government and were public funded, I mean, sometimes not everyone had access to this equipment. So this was managed like it was like almost a private thing. So the control of information is not just the control of equipment, you know, it's also the control of information was unbelievable in some places some decades ago. So, of course, internet was changing all these things, and many people who were trying to control the information, the production, et cetera, are not able to control these kind of things anymore. So the idea of putting the collection of Latin American electroacoustic music out of Latin America was first because I had the opportunity of doing it here, but also because maybe this is an illusion, I'm not sure now that I'm living in the northern hemisphere, is a little bit more of stability. That it's not just to create the collection, but it's the idea of that the collection is going to be in the same place the next month. That makes a difference.
That makes a whole difference. I hope that our listeners will be curious to visit these archives that are on. Can we mention the website where the archives are available?
Yes, I mean the name of the organization. The website is a really complex name, but I can try to summarize that. If you look in the web and you just put Fondation Daniel Langlois or FDL, for example, and you add my last name, Dalfarra, you're going to find the collection. Or, so again, I mean, Fondation Daniel Langlois and my name, but also the other ways, if you put Latin American Electroacoustic Music Collection,
you can find it.
You should find it very easily.
And we'll add the link in our website as well.
Yes, and something important to mention is that from those 1,800 pieces I was mentioning that are in the collection, we were able to, let's say, free for public listening through the web, 550 pieces.
So it's today already a lot.
Oh, yes, that's a lot of music, yes. Really.
Who are the artists that in Latin America are in this, let's say, in our contemporary scenario in the electroacoustic music in Latin America? Who are the ones who are working these days?
I was mentioning before some of the pioneers, even some people, you know, that are still very active, even if they are already in their 70s. I mean, from people like, for example, Horacio Bayone, he lives in France, but he's from Cordoba in Argentina. But one composer that I like very much his work. There are many, many, many. There are really, I would say, many hundreds of composers doing this kind of music in Latin America. But for example, one composer I admire his work is Javier Alvarez from Mexico. He has a wonderful production of acoustic mixed and also electroacoustic music with wonderful pieces that are being played all around the world, that pieces that are really with also with an instrumentation that is very special, like, for example, one of his pieces that has already like 30 years, but is for maracas and tape, you know, maracas and electroacoustics. It's a very difficult combination of instruments. Also, I would like to mention, that even people from Guatemala, for example, that were starting to do electroacoustic music in the early 60s, like Joaquín Orellana. Joaquín Orellana started to do music in these countries, or even in places like, you know, the Dominican Republic, or places where we can think, maybe nothing was happening in those countries. But, I mean, if you go to Colombia these years, for example, before it was really hard to get the information who was doing something in Colombia. But now, today, it's amazing the amount of composers that you can find doing electroacoustic music, from some of them, like very well known, that has been working for many years, like Rodolfo Acosta or Mauricio Bejarano or Juan Reyes. But there are many people, and the same, I could go through different countries, and it's really amazing the amount of composers working in, well, in almost all Latin America. Not, I wouldn't say in every country, but in most places.
Yeah, especially it's amazing because we know that the difficulties in Latin America, even when maybe now the political conditions that you were mentioning before are not the same, but economic conditions are still difficult. So I guess that all the artists you are mentioning, they're also making a big effort just to go through the difficulties to make this art possible.
I think, yes, in many cases, but at the same time, as I was saying, yes, I think that in Latin America there has been many decades of many difficulties in the terms of socio-economical things, but also the world economy is changing fast, and many things are changing fast, so I think that we don't know exactly where Latin America is going to be positioned in a few years. I think that the situation is going to be different, not far in the future, that the key players maybe are going to start. We already talk about, you know, some other countries like Brazil has became like a world voice, leading voice in the concert of countries. And that is going to have an impact in every aspect. I mean, the investments, for example, in education that you can see during these years in Brazil, I think and I hope and I wish that will have a huge impact in the mid and short term in this country. And that will impact a lot in general, but also in the arts production. So I think that that's going to be really, really important in the future years.
About the future of the art in this context that you were just describing, what it's the main hope for Latin America. What's the future of this particular art in Latin America related with the music? Is this the music of the future?
That's an interesting point that sometimes I'm questioning myself and my colleagues. Sometimes, yes, because, I mean, this was thought the music of the future 50 years ago. So we were thinking that this music was going to be the music that today we were all be listening to this kind of music, and didn't happen. So I don't want to make any, you know, I don't want to make a futurism in the sense of announce what's going to happen. I think that many things are going to be changed, that this kind of music is still going to exist together with many other kind of expressions. but also that this kind of music is being intertwined and combined and practiced together with other expression, like, for example, what we call today visual music, or different kind of experimental trends where the barriers and the borders between different kind of music are not so hard like it was before. Before, if you was doing this kind of music, you couldn't do that other kind of music because your colleagues were thinking that that was not correct. Yes, that was the way it was working, really.
Yeah.
So today, all those borders are much more flexible, like it happens in general in many other aspects in society. So that flexibility, we'll see in the future if that flexibility is good or bad, but in principle, it looks like it's helping a lot to cross from one stream to the other. So we can do this kind of music, but we can also do other kind of music, and we can mix and jump between different kind of expressions without feeling horror, you know? Oh, if I'm doing this, I cannot do that. So I think that that's very important, that we are flexible, of course, because of the contemporary music scene and the contemporary arts in general. It's more difficult today than many years ago, when it was very clear what was art and was not, and what was not art. Today, everything is much more complex. But still, I'm sure that if you hear, if you listen carefully to a good piece of electroacoustic music, you will identify that like a really like a work of art. In some cases, you are going to wonder, but in many cases, I'm sure the people, I'm not talking of the professional, I'm not talking about the people who is trained for that. I'm talking about the general public. If you listen to a really good work, you are going to identify that, even if you don't understand it quite well, like a good piece of art, an interesting work of art.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ricardo Dalfarra, for, first of all, for doing all this job through the this kind of art that, as you mentioned, sometimes it wasn't like, oh, is this art? And for not doubting about that, and for making this amazing website where all our listeners can go and take a look and navigate through it. Thank you so much, Ricardo, for giving us this interview.
Thank you for having me, and also I hope this will be good for challenging a little bit the audience and for inviting them to go to the gallery, to 516 Arts Gallery in downtown Albuquerque, so they can listen to the pieces online, or they can go and see the installation and see the other works by my colleagues, because there are many people from Latin America attending the exhibition. So thank you.